Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through J.W. Cole Financial, Inc., member FINRA, and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Big Show, Your Money with David Hayes. Good morning because I'm live in the studio again this Saturday. We were kicked to the curb by the Colts on Thursday night for NFL coverage, so I said, hey, let's try to do a live show again on Saturday morning. Great day to be an American. Of course, this weekend's a long weekend, and appreciate everyone enjoying themselves, having a safe weekend. Indiana football kicks off today at 4 o'clock against the Salukis. What's a Saluki? Well, they would say, what's a Hoosier, so I can't really blame them for that. Last night, Edgewood was a big winner. My old schools, North, took it on the chin again. And the T-Birds over in Greene County, 3-0 for the first time ever. They've got to be pretty excited about that. We've got a good show today. Doug Hughes is going to be calling in a little bit later in the show. We're going to be talking about the emotional side of investing. Certainly the last several weeks has tested that for a lot of people. Rod Holloway will call us in just a few minutes, too, to give us an update on what happened in the markets this past week. But before that, let's do a little news of the week brought to you by my buddy Lance Like at the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Like Law Group, 323-8300. Well, the economists agree that the Fed will now move in September. Is it time for the Federal Reserve to move interest rates? We'll talk to Rod a little bit about that. But on Friday, the August jobs report showed that non-farm payrolls grew by 173,000. This according to Business Insider. But the unemployment rate, which is the key figure here, fell to 5.1%. Job gains were a little less than expected, but the unemployment rate dropped was the largest that they had, or larger than had been forecasted, and actually puts them right in the middle of the range of 5 to 5.2 the Fed has been using as a consideration for full employment. The report also suggests that as you look to the Fed in the July meeting, that the Fed said this, that when it has seen some further improvement in the labor market and is reasonably confident that inflation will move back to its 2% objective over the medium term, then they may raise rates. Well, I think the only thing or the only hurdle they have is that inflation rate. So we'll see. I mean, I'm going to talk to Rod about that in just a few minutes, and I think he'll tell you what I think most people have in their mind. Does it really even matter? Something from by the numbers. This is pretty interesting. The total return of the S&P 500 over the last five calendar years is 105%. But just the best 12 trading days during that 5 years, that's 12 out of 1,258 days, produced a 53.7% gain. So in other words, 1% of the trading days over the last 5 years were responsible for 51% of the index's total return. You can't time this thing, folks. This was interesting because we've been talking about China and how it's, you know, contracting some, and what does that mean to the U.S.? Well, back in 2000, the U.S. exports, meaning what we sold to China, was less than half as much as what we shipped to Germany. But by 2014, the U.S. exports of goods and services to China were more than double the exports shipped to Germany. So that comes out of the Commerce Department. So, you know, China's slowdown does matter to a lot of U.S. companies. And finally, Mary Beth Franklin will be on the show. She's the former senior editor of Kiplinger Magazine and now, of course, contributing editor of Investment News. Talks a lot about and writes a lot about Social Security. We're going to be talking with her about this, but out of the Atlantic Business Journal, they talk about Social Security and how they're going to cut benefits without really cutting benefits. And I think this is something we'll tag Mary Beth on and see what she thinks. But they talk about how Americans like their Social Security benefits quite a bit, and they oppose cuts by a margin of 2-1. Even young folks who won't be seeing benefits anytime soon seem to feel pretty protective of Social Security, according to a recent poll from Pew Research Center. And they say only one way to effectively cut benefits is to raise the age in which they can kick in. So we're going to be talking to Mary Beth a lot about that in just a few weeks. So let's take a break and come back and talk to Mr. Rod Holloway of Comprehensive Financial Consultants and see what he has to say about this crazy market we've been part of. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Football Saturday here in Bloomington. Someone that I know will be at the tailgate today, Rod Holloway, joins us now on the telephone. Good morning, Rod. How's it going this morning out there on Zikes Road?
Hey, good morning, Dave. Going well. Feels like it's going to be a hot one today, but hey, the sun's out, so we'll deal with the heat on this first football Saturday for the Hoosiers.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about it. You know, Rod, the last few weeks have been a little bit nutso in the market. Seems like we, you know, dropped 200-400 points, and the next day we're up 300 or 400 points. It's just a crazy time. You know, it's hard to watch your portfolio values fluctuate. You know, if you're at or nearing retirement, you also may be feeling especially emotional about these market movements. But, Rod, we've obviously, we don't have a crystal ball. Our crystal ball is foggy like everyone else's, but our message has been to not panic, stay calm. And I think that's what I wanted you to talk to folks a little bit about this morning. Because we hear about China, you hear about the Fed, you know, all these different headwinds that are out there. People on the internet, they're hearing commercials from Ron Paul. I mean, it's crazy out there. What do people need to do right now in the time that we're facing or that we've just gone through?
Yeah, you know, like you said, you need to kind of take a deep breath. You need to sit back. You need to try and flush all of the negative emotions that you're potentially feeling on these big sell-off days. You know, normally we don't get overly emotional when we're up great big. Maybe a little bit greedy kicks in and you get a little more aggressive because you want more of your assets growing big. But the emotion that really seems to affect us is that emotion of fear when things are going really bad. So you need to kind of flush that out. You need to sit down. It can be a good time to reevaluate where you're at. You know, do you have the proper allocation for your time horizon, for what the purpose of that money is, be it retirement, college savings for your children or grandchildren or whatever it is. But the thing is, don't jump in and make rash decisions when your gut's in knots and you're feeling emotional. And especially don't think, as you alluded to in that first segment talking about the best days, don't think that you can avoid these big sell-off days, but yet jump back in and catch the rallies. You may do it successfully once or twice, but it's pure luck. There is no way to do it successfully. There are many patterns that can be recognized that can give you some clues, but even those patterns never hold true, and there are multiple ones. It's just like with this sell-off. Okay, rarely do you have a V-shaped recovery, but you don't know ahead of time. You know, so if you jumped in when that market tended to bottom on that Tuesday after the 1,000-point drop when it opened on Monday because it sold off again Tuesday, if you jumped in and you rode that rally up then on Wednesday and Thursday, did you jump back out? Because you know what? We're going back down and we're testing those lows again. So that's common to retest the lows, but it doesn't happen every time. Sometimes it's a V-shaped recovery. Sometimes it's a W recovery. Sometimes it's a stair-step recovery where each step tread goes sideways for a long period of time as you begin to rebuild momentum. Those are just too difficult to predict ahead of time. Save that for the traders. That's what they attempt to do on a daily basis. Not saying that that they can time it better, but it is what they do over and over and over. The retail guy, especially in his retirement account, keep plugging away on a monthly basis and just evaluate, do you have the proper allocation for a long-time successful plan for retirement?
And, Rod, of course, people that are in 401ks or in those mutual fund subaccounts, they settle at the end of the day. So if you press the sell button at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, it's the end of the price of that day that you get. And the same thing is true when you buy. So if you tried to buy in the next morning because it looked like it was going to go up, well, you're not going to buy until the end of that day. So you really effectively cannot do that in funds. And like Rod said, just stay the course, have an asset allocation that fits your risk tolerance and meets your goals. And Rod, we've had meetings all week long with people and have had these types of discussions. And we haven't had a lot of panicked clients. And I think that's a tribute to us, I think, walking these people through their goal-based portfolios. I've not had a lot of panic calls. We've had two or three people just calling, a little bit concerned about things. But yet they haven't received their statements yet either, Rod. That comes out probably, what, today or tomorrow. So maybe we'll start to get some more calls early next week. But who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Once they actually see it on paper and they realize what type of potential damage was done to the portfolio, they call. And usually what happens, it's the retail guy who tells you right from the get-go, I don't understand this at all. And then their fear is when they see big drops, 200, 300, 400 point drops, and they say, well, gosh, if it can drop that much in a day, it only takes a matter of a few months of consecutive days dropping like that before my account goes to zero? Well, like we try and explain to everybody, you know, especially when you're in mutual funds, you're in exchange-traded funds, unit investment trusts, these pooled investments, even if you have a well-diversified individual stock portfolio where you own 50 stocks, 100 stocks, there are so many stocks that are owned in these investments. For your dollars to go to zero in every one of those investments, there's a lot going wrong in the world to where I would say, you know what, investments may not matter anymore. The ability to grow your own food and the fact that you would have guns and ammunition may be the two most important things going on in the world if every single company is failing and going into bankruptcy.
Rod, do you
it just doesn't work like that.
Do you
that.
Remember going to Sam's Club around 2008 and people would be pushing carts through Sam's Club with mounds of bottled water and big cans of food, and if you'd ask them, and I ask a few, man, are you having a party? No, I'm just kind of storing up for bad times ahead. So there are people out there that are doing that.
The old Y2K, you know, the whole world was going to shut down when we flipped from 1999 to 2000, so everybody stockpiled to be prepared for a global shutdown of everything, it appeared, is what some people were thinking.
Real quick, before we let you go, Rod, the Fed obviously meeting again this month. With the jobs numbers coming in, not as good as expected, but I think August typically isn't a terrific month for reporting. They usually get revised up. But that unemployment number, dead in the center of their target range. Is it likely that the Fed will now raise rates in September? And then in your opinion, does that really even matter?
Well, you know, initially, I'd be a little surprised if they go in September only because the odds had been pushed so low that I'm not sure one number makes them make a move here in about 2 weeks when the meeting is. They may, I'm not making any bets one way or another, but I'd be a little surprised. I do think they're going to move this year, and here's the reason why. You partially alluded to it. It's not a huge deal, especially not 25 basis points, and if we're going to avoid moving because China slows down, or Europe is slowing down, you know, or any of these outside events, you know what? We're never going to move because the whole world is never going to be perfect for a rate increase. There's always going to be some issues somewhere, whether it's in emerging markets, developed markets, whatever. There's always going to be something out there. What the Fed really needs to focus on, can our economy handle it? Is our economy continue to progress and move forward? If our economy can't handle a 25 basis point increase, and understand this is an increase on the overnight borrowing rate between financial institutions, if our economy can't handle that and it pushes us into a recession, then all these numbers that are coming out aren't real numbers, they're false numbers, and we don't know what's really going on because 25 basis points on an overnight lending rate should not crush our economy. So what I said on Glass's show Friday morning, let's just get a rate move. Let's get it behind us. Let's find out the world does not end because we've got a federal funds rate at 0.25% instead of zero.
There we go. Hot Rod Holloway, everyone. Rod, enjoy the day. I'll see you out at the tailgate around 2 or 3 o'clock today, and we'll root the Hoosiers on to a big victory over those Salukis.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it. Go Hoosiers, and I'll see you out there.
All right, see you, buddy. We're going to take a break, guys. When we come back, Doug Hughes will be calling in, the king of investor behavior. We're going to go through the investor emotional cycle. How do you identify it, and how do you avoid getting trapped in it? And also, we're going to talk about that euphoria of gain versus the hurt of loss. Doug Hughes in just a few minutes, everyone. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, as investors, we go through this kind of emotional cycle, you know, as the market starts to go up, and it could be with real estate, it could be in the stock market, but you get a little enthusiastic, you know, and then all of a sudden, maybe a little excitement and optimism, and you get to the point where you're saying, I'm very pleased with my investment or how my investments are going. And then a state of euphoria sets in, if this lasts for any time at all. And usually that's the highest level of financial risk is at that moment when everyone's like, yeah, this is great, this is going to go on forever. And, you know, that's probably the time to sell, not buy. But just like real estate and stocks, it seems like the faster they go up, the more people want to buy them. And as they go down, they don't want to buy them because they're fearful. And that's really the next part of the cycle is the market start to retract. You know, you get a little anxiety, maybe a little denial. This is only a temporary downturn. I'm in it for the long run. But then it continues to maybe go down. And when it does, fear and then panic and discouragement all sets in. And you start to think, man, this market is not going in my favor. And then that's really the fear cycle right there. You get to the bottom, and that's the best time to invest. But usually that's when capitulation sets in and people throw in the towel. But then eventually hope and relief and optimism returns, and Doug Hughes is on the show now, and hope and optimism has returned. Here he is, Douglas Hughes, everybody. Hey, Doug.
Hey, good morning, David. How are you?
Did I describe the investor emotional cycle well enough, Doug? Because I think as we talk about gains, it's true. People feel the gains one way, they feel the hurts another way. And I know this has been proven with many statistical studies and studies with people in behavioral finance. To talk people through the euphoria of gain and the hurt of loss.
Well, you know, David, it's very interesting. What happens to us is we have these momentums that build, and actually there's investment portfolios built just based on momentum. So this momentum begins to build. You have 1 year of good gains. You have 2 years of good gains. And all of a sudden, you think that good gains are the norm. And let's not even talk about good gains. What about great gains? You think back in the 1990s, during that time when people were getting 20, 30, 40, 50% returns on their money, and that kind of became the norm. And when, as you mentioned, when this begins to happen, people just begin falling in and buying and buying and buying, and they think there's no end in sight or no top. They never see the market too high. And they can begin to make plans. They begin to think that it's only going to go one way. And then what begins to happen is when the market corrects itself, or when individual stock news turns bad, or there's some kind of a big challenge like we had on 9/11, and the markets get absolutely rattled, then people quickly withdraw or they pull back from those investments because they enjoy that euphoria so much, but the moment it begins to get rattled, we go down the other direction because people are very emotional when it comes to money. I mean, you lose a $20 bill and you about tear the house apart, right? And you can imagine then when someone has an investment portfolio, they've saved that money for 20 or 30 years, and all of a sudden they've lost more in 6 months than they made in a year in their highest earning years. That becomes a real challenge to them.
You know, I go back to the late 90s when folks were retiring, and the norm that they had felt was those huge returns in the 90s. And the 4% withdrawal rule had been thrown out, and folks were saying, well, I've been making 12, 15, 18% of my money. I can take 10% out each and every year. And folks, this is the way it was back in the 90s. And then they hit the 2000s, and guess what? Those people are now working at Sam's Club saying, may I help you? Because they have to be there, not because they want to be there. And I saw something, Doug, from By the Numbers, and they talk about it depends, you know, on the sequence of returns. An individual with $1 million invested 100% in the S&P 500 as of 1-1 of 1973. And then they withdrew $100,000 a year, adjusted for inflation. They were out of money completely in just 9 years. But the second individual with $1 million invested in the S&P as of 1-1-82, 1982, withdrawing the exact same amount, would have accumulated $4.4 million after remaining after these 33 years. So you're right. The most recent experience is what we believe to be the ongoing truth, and that's just not the case, and people need to recognize that, and that's why we're trying to communicate that to folks this morning.
You know, David, it's and we've all heard these stories. It makes it kind of cute. You know, Warren Buffett talked about the time that the guy who was shining his shoes there at the airport was beginning to tell him it's time to buy stocks. He knew it was time to get out. And what happens to a lot of people is that the euphoria begins to bring investors with unrealistic expectations in. And when unrealistic expectations aren't met, people make big decisions. And that's why you see people, even like today, who will call in and they cash everything out. And they think we need to cash everything out. We need to cash everything out. And that's not good behavior either. So withdrawal rates, as you're talking about, a very, very big illusion when markets are going high. But then the opposite side is true. A lot of people, it's not just withdrawal rates. It's just complete actions of taking away, because they're afraid if the market goes down 10%, it's destined to go down 50%. And that's kind of what we're seeing right now with all of the headline news that's out there. I know Rod probably has talked about this on the show in the last couple of weeks, but one of the things in investor behavior, when I studied at the Wharton School, we talked quite a bit about was anchoring. Why do people anchor to what they anchor to? They read one headline, or they read one article, or they... right now, it's on the front page of the Internet. Four billionaires say this is coming, or Stansberry Research says. And they anchor to something that is fearful, and then they make drastic decisions that can really impact their overall return. So it's the sequence of returns, it's also the sequence of withdrawals, and how significant those withdrawals are based on fear. Markets are going to correct. And it's interesting, you're talking about people making withdrawals of 8, 10, 12% because that's what they could do in the 90s. I would also parallel that with another investment vehicle, and that's life insurance. Because back in the 80s and 90s, life insurance hypotheticals would run at 8, 10, and 12% interest rates. Mm-hmm. And guess what? That didn't happen either. And those people are having to make enormous adjustments to the reality of their life insurance policy. So euphoria can pull people into what we know is very unrealistic long-term expectations.
Doug Hughes is with us. In this past week, we wrote about thriving during volatility in our weekly commentary. If you'd like to get that, it's free. You can go to our website, cfci.us, and it's called... What is it called, Doug? I don't even know. I just call it the weekly commentary, but you'll find it. It's on there on the right-hand side.
Weekly commentary. Yeah.
So on the, you know, we wrote about this. It's hard to watch your portfolio value fluctuate, especially when the money involved represents a lifetime of hard work and a comfortable future. And especially if you're nearing retirement, you might feel especially emotional about these recent market movements. And right now, the U.S. markets are experiencing a period of significant volatility, rapid sell-offs followed by powerful rallies. And during volatile times, it's easy to get spooked and start questioning the logic behind your strategies. Now, while it may be tempting to pull out of the markets and wait out the volatility, making investment decisions based on fear is usually the worst thing you can do. And as Doug mentioned, behavioral economists have found that people feel the effect of market losses twice as powerful as market gains. So losses hurt. There's no question about it. But we can't have the gains without the losses. It's the nature of the market to move up and down, like Doug just mentioned, sometimes very rapidly. So trying to time the market, you can't do it. It's almost impossible. If you've done it, it's because you got lucky. And I know there's a few people out there that are saying, yes, I can do it. No, you can't. They jump in and out of the markets. It rarely works. So what can you do when the market swings a lot? When we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about that, managing volatility, some risk management strategies right out of our book, Doug, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, available on Amazon. But we'll be back with Doug Hughes. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. We're talking about the volatility in the recent in the markets over the last couple of weeks. Doug Hughes joins me on the phone as we talk about investor behavior. And, you know, we talked before the break, what can you do when markets swing? Well, number one, use your head, not your gut. And we've been talking about this. It's natural to feel emotional about your hard-earned money, especially when the decisions can be very costly because you're likely to buy and sell at the wrong time, you know, getting in and out of your funds, potentially locking in these losses and losing out on gains. Take a step back. We know it's hard to tune out the noise when the media headlines are screaming, the sky is falling, China's falling, Europe's in trouble, oil's down. We know that. But we recommend you focus on three big things. Number one, have your goals changed? Pretty simple. Number two, has your investment time frame changed? Is it now 2 years rather than 50 years? Are your investments still in line with those goals? Those are the three biggies. Doug Hughes is with us. And Doug, as people look at the considerations for investment, I mean, one, a really good one is to go back to the old tried and true, and that's a risk tolerance questionnaire. People just walk them through that, because I think from a real simple point of view, a person can get an idea of what their true risk tolerance is by answering, you know, 10, 15, 20 questions, right?
Absolutely. And you know, David, I actually I like to do this with people that I work with, and I actually do it on myself, perhaps the nerd coming out of me. But I think it's always good to do a risk tolerance questionnaire in different market cycles. I mean, if you look at your portfolio and you're higher than you've ever been as far as value goes, you need to do a risk tolerance questionnaire based on that. And then when the markets are really, really wobbly, as they seem to be right now, you need to pull one back out and do one right now. Because the problem is that when we do risk tolerance questionnaires one time 5 years ago, the markets change in those 5 years. Our lives change in those 5 years. And so I'm not saying you change your strategy, but you need to be able to look at your risk tolerance and identify how you felt when things were high. Because, you know, you and I have learned this a long time ago. Most risk tolerance questionnaires have more to do with percentages than actual dollars. And so one of the things that I like to say to people is that when you look at your loss, it's one thing to say I'm willing to be down 10%. well, if you have $1 million, what you're saying is I'm willing to be down $100,000. That conversation becomes very different. And so investment consideration should always be based on dollar loss, not just percentages, because, you know, we lose percentages, really, quite honestly, we do. That's why people can go through markets and have 10, 15% returns and not think it's very much, because another fund in the 401k did 20%. And you feel like, well, you know, I didn't do as good as I could. Well, the reality is, no, you might have done exactly how you should have done based on your risk tolerance. And when people are at all-time highs or very high values at their in different stages of their life, I think it's a good time to sit to break out the investment risk tolerance questionnaire and say, hey, I'm sitting here today, how much am I willing to put on the table that could go down 10, 20, 30, 40%? By the way, we do offer these questionnaires, and I think that everyone should take advantage of something like this.
Yeah, and if you'd like to have one, I was getting ready to mention that. If you're worried about these recent market movements, or even if you're not, and you'd just like to know where you should stand as far as a risk-based portfolio, shoot us an email, cfci.us, in the contact us. Just say, I'd like to have the risk questionnaire. We'll get that to you. You take it, you score it yourself, and then take a good look at your investments and say, are these positioned appropriately for my risk tolerance? And like Doug said, and I've said it for many years, it's in the book as well, no one knows how much risk they can take until they've taken too much. Then they're like, uh-oh, that wasn't a good idea. Hey, Doug, we talk about some risk management strategies in our book. It actually is in Chapter 6, and probably the best one, obviously, is the asset allocation, which we just talked about in the risk tolerance questionnaire. But another tried and true is the good old-fashioned dollar cost averaging. Walk us through what dollar cost averaging is and how it really works.
Sure. So, well, a lot of people are doing dollar cost averaging whether they realize it or not. It simply means that when you get paid, for example, your paycheck, every time you get paid, a certain amount of money goes into your 401k plan, as an example. And so you're buying shares of that particular investment, some weeks up, some weeks down. But the bottom line is that if you're buying at intervals, then over the course of a year, you have averaged in a certain dollar amount. And that share price is averaged out, and you typically bought at a lower than obviously just buying at the high all of the time. Most people are doing this. If you're involved in the plan, you're doing this. But another thing that's interesting, David, that we've seen people do with dollar cost averaging is to, for example, buy an investment that pays a monthly dividend. And this is becoming kind of popular again. But to take a lump sum of money and buy an investment that provides monthly distributions or monthly income, monthly dividends perhaps, and take those monthly dividends and edge your way into the market, again, on a monthly basis so that you're not putting all your money into a wild market right now. It's hard to expect anyone to be able to time the market exactly right. So dollar cost averaging smooths out those contributions into the market. So some people buy a lump sum in a fixed income portfolio, and they buy shares of investment every time that, you know, once a month with those dividends. Another thing that people are doing now is they're just taking a lump sum of money and saying to their advisor, I want you to buy me in over the next 12 months on a systematic way. Not just when the market dips, that's too hard to predict, but on a systematic way, I want you to put the money in. Because when you do it that way, again, you're lowering the share cost as you buy down. Now, it takes some time, obviously, to put dollar cost averaging into play and for it to work at the whole process through, but it's a wonderful strategy. There's nothing worse than thinking you're buying at the right time, only to see the market evaporate 10, 15% right out of the gate. It's hard to make that up. And remember, when you lose 15%, it takes 17.3% to get back to even. When you lose 20%, it takes 23% to get back to even. These are very real downward cycles that people, if they buy at the wrong time, have a very steep climb to come back up.
And I'll mention this for compliance purposes, that dollar cost averaging does not assure you that you'll gain. It just simply, when you add up the numbers, and my mathematicians and engineers out there, you'll have to do the math because I know you won't believe me, but the average cost will always be less than the average price. So, Doug, let's talk a little bit about rebalancing. And we'll say this, that when you have a large retirement balance, let's say you have $500,000 or $1 million and you're 55 years old and the market drops 20% and you're down now $100,000 or $200,000, it's very difficult to dollar cost average your way out of that. So what I've been suggesting to people is figuring out what's your minimum return, what's the minimum return necessary to get you where you need to be. And I had a great meeting this week with a federal employee who had a nice retirement account. He's about 5 or 6 years away from retirement. And we realized that he only needed to obtain about a 3.5% return on his investment to meet his goals. Very risk, very risk-averse person. Well, in the TSP fund, you have a G and a C and an I and an S fund, all those things. So the G fund is their government securities fund, and it doesn't go down, but it doesn't make a lot. So what we determined was that, and this is kind of strange, but 73% was going to be in the G fund, and the rest was going to be in the C, I, and the S. And then all new contributions were going not in the G fund, but in the C and the I and the S. So if the market went down, he was able to take advantage of those new prices. And the math worked on it very, very well, because if the market dropped significantly, the contributions that he was putting in, because he was maxing out, would make up for those. He'd be buying cheaper. And then once a year, boom, we hit the reset button. Everything rebalances back, and you go again. And you do that for the next several years, and that will protect you from any major market losses as you head into the end of the year. Now, Doug, I want to talk about page 111 in our book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. Transferring some of this risk through the use of annuities. I know that we our big saying is don't be down on something you're not up on, and focus on what it does, not what it is. Talk real briefly about annuities and how folks can transfer their income risk through the use of an annuity.
Absolutely, and annuities oftentimes have been misunderstood, misquoted, and what people need to realize is there are several different types of annuities. Some are lifetime income annuities, which is simply where you take a lump sum of money, transfer it to the insurance company, and they, by contract, pay you out an agreed amount over a certain amount of time. You can get 10-year, 20-year, 30-year payouts. You can also take an annuity contract and annuitize it, meaning that you monetize it. I'm going saying to the insurance company, I want to get a certain payment a month for the next 5 years. So you can structure guaranteed income for a specified amount of time through an annuity contract. Now, these aren't going to keep up with the S&P. That's not even the function of these. These are truly to predetermine a guaranteed income amount for a certain amount of time.
Our new saying in the office, Doug, our new saying is commit the fewest amount of dollars possible to produce the income that you need, and that's the use of an annuity for the most part.
That's exactly right. The next way, David, is there are different types of annuity contracts, from variable to index, different things like this. But a lot of them provide you the opportunity to stay invested, either in indexes or into sub-accounts, and allow you, as long as you stay within the guardrail, typically depending on your age, 0 to 5%, that you can turn on that income stream, and if the account value goes to zero, you continue getting that same guaranteed income. And so the difference there is, you know, if you have, just any basket of investments, whatever you'd like to say, and you begin drawing the money out and you have a bad sequence of returns, there's nothing to look back to say that is my minimum guaranteed income amount. You're totally hoping that the market will pull you back through or your asset allocation will bring you back up. But you can transfer the risk of going to zero and running income totally out of money by setting yourself onto a path of guaranteed income. And that's really what an annuity can do. And listen, David, all our listeners need to know these come in many shapes and sizes. You need to make sure that you're up on it before you're down on it, but you also need to make sure you know what you're getting into. Because, you know, my famous saying...
Can I say it for you, Doug? Can I say it for you? It's always easier to get in something than out of something. Doug Hughes quote-ism for the day. Hey, Doug, I appreciate you taking the time this morning. Have a great weekend. I'll catch up with you Tuesday morning, bright and early.
Okay, go Hoosiers.
See you, buddy. Bye-bye. We'll be back, folks. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, if you'd like to submit a question for the questions of the week, you can go to cfci.us and put your question in. We will answer it pretty quickly and maybe even call you on the phone. Sometimes questions lead to more questions, and I'm always like, just call the guy rather than email it back and forth. It can get kind of confusing. But have some good questions this week. We have three or four here lined up, so I have not reviewed these like always, but we'll give it a shot. Number one. We had a question that says, I just bought a life insurance policy that's worth $750,000 if I die. So this was a friend of mine, actually. And we were at dinner the other night, and you said, that's not enough. It seems like enough, how do you figure how much you really need? And I said this because I knew his situation and I knew it was not enough. So here's the thing. You need to look at debt payments, plan completion. How much do you need for that, like retirement? Income to maintain the lifestyle for your family. So let's say your debt is $400,000 all in, and it costs you $3,000 a month to service it. Your income needs to live the way you want to pay your debts is about $8,000 to $9,000 a month. Now, no debt. If you had enough to pay the debts off, now you need about $5,000 to $6,000 a month. You take that times 12, divide it by about 7, which is sort of a good number. So you need about $1,000,000. Then, what about college planning or retirement planning? So the $1,000,000 just replaces the income need to sustain the lifestyle for your family. Then what about college planning, retirement planning? That was coming off your gross before you even saw your paycheck. 20 years away, maintain your lifestyle, inflation adjust, you need about $10,000 a month to maintain the same lifestyle in 20 years that you need today that $6,000 will provide. So you need another $3 million in 20 years. So today you'd need about $775,000. If you died, we'd grow into $3 million about 20 years away at 7%. So now you add all these numbers up. You add up the $400,000 to pay off your debts, the $1 million to maintain your income, and $775,000 to fund these other things like college and retirement. So you need about $2 million of coverage. Now, that was a long scenario to give you a really simple answer was that, or that you didn't have enough. But another easy way is 7 to 12 times your annual earnings. If you're a family and you have some debts and you have kids, that's a pretty good number. So if that 750 is 12 times your income, then maybe it's enough. But I always like to buy different policies to match up to different needs, maybe decreasing term for your debts and retirement completion, because the longer you live, the less you're going to need. You know, if you'd like an insurance review, folks, let us know. We have some pretty qualified folks in that area. So anyway, I'm a big proponent of making sure that you have life insurance. You have it for one of two reasons. You either owe someone or you love someone. So most of us listening have one or both of those. Another question. Good question. I turned 50 in October. Can I now put more money into my 401k? I've already maxed out for this year based on my current age. Well, the answer is yes. Contribution limits for this year were $18,000. And if you're over 50, you can put another $6,000 in. And the way way this works is it's the year you turn 50. So even though you've maxed out so far and you're turning 50 in October, you can still put another $6,000 in. And that's a common question we get very, very often. And I'm not sure what the contribution limits are going to be for 2016, if they're going to stay the same. But we'll let you know when we find out. Here's a good question. I got it from IRAhelp.com. And this is, of course, the Ed Slott Advisor Group forum. It says, I'm thinking about doing a Roth conversion. When do I have to have it completed by? Well, first of all, I tell you, this is great thinking. Markets are down. You can convert now at a lower value. You hope it's the lowest value. You just have to do it before the end of the year, before 12/31. I wouldn't wait. You know, now what's coming up is the deadline for recharacterization. So basically what you do is you have an investment that's down. And we've done this for a few people on some select investments that are down that we want to keep. You convert those to a Roth, you pay the tax on the converted amount, the actual market value, and then hopefully the value returns back to its par, and all that's tax-free. We've done that many times in the past. The recharacterization is, what if you do it and then it doesn't work out? So you convert a number that you thought was low, and then it goes even lower. Well, you can recharacterize that. You can recharacterize it, put it back as though you never did it in the first place, up until October 15th, the year following the conversion. So, again, that deadline's coming up pretty soon. So if you converted, say, something last year and now it's way down, you could recharacterize that back, wait until the end of the year or the next year, and then convert it again if you'd like. So that's a great question that came actually from one of our folks, and then we got into the ones from IRAhelp.com. And those were things like, can I put gold in my IRA, or there was another question about, are there complications of owning gold in the IRA? But because we're running a little short of time, I'm going to boot that until maybe next week. Or as I look at them, they're really not that good of questions anyway, so we may not use them at all. So let's take another break. When we come back, we'll start to wrap up the show, preview what's coming up in the next few weeks. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Hey, if you didn't hear the show in its entirety, you can always go to WGCLradio.com. Probably in just a few hours. Jim does a great job of getting those shows up pretty darn quickly. And again, we've got a show live next Thursday night as we're back on the air live then, and then the replay on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. In a couple weeks, we'll have Mary Beth Franklin. Mary Beth, of course, has been on the show many times. I've touted my friendship with her, maybe even exploited it at times, where she wrote a killer quote for the back of our book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. She will be on in a couple of weeks. And Mary Beth is now the contributing editor of Investment News, and she's been writing a lot about Medicare, Social Security, and planning for that. You know, a lot of us underestimate the amount of money we're going to spend on health care in retirement. And she's going to, I think, put to light exactly what you need to be concerned about and how you prepare for that. So Mary Beth will be on in a few weeks. And we'll talk also about some of the Social Security claiming strategies, of course, that made her famous and how you can implement those yourself. But then also, what are some of those strategies that we're using now or that we're touting or planning for that are likely to go away? She has her finger on the pulse when it comes to that type of information. So can't wait to have Mary Beth on. And that's always a great show. It's one of those you put in the can for a replay time when you're out of town or on, you know, vacation with your family or at a conference or something like that. So looking forward to having her on in just a few weeks. I'm almost a little cautious to have him on, but Harry Dent, we've worked out a deal to get him on and also in the next month because he scares people. And when he scares people, we get phone calls. So here we're talking about patience and good asset allocation and all the things that you should do. Harry will come on, and you'll be over at Sam's Club stacking your cart with water and canned goods because he'll scare you. So I'm a little bit cautious of having Harry on, but he's, you know, a famous guy, you know, wrote best-selling books. He's on CNBC all the time. He's actually at his Irrational Exuberance conference that he's putting on right now. I was going to try to go to it, but it just didn't work out on my schedule. Up in Canada. So it's a kind of a national conference that he puts together. Some national well-known speakers come in, and people from all industries come in to learn about economics, predictable spending patterns, demographics, bubbles and burstings and all that great stuff. So I'll think about it. If you're really a Harry Dent follower and you'd love to hear him talk, I'll tell you what, the guy is very, very smart. But the problem is when he starts to predict where the markets are going, that's where we have trouble, because as far as economics go, and the central bank policies, and I mean, he's been talking about China for years that they were going to fall on their tail. He predicted, you know, Japan's rise and fall, and you know, so he's good at that stuff. But he also scares people when it comes to the market. So we're going to think about it. But if you really want to hear Harry, shoot me an email, cfci.us, and we may very well make it happen. So looking forward to today. I hope you enjoyed the show. We have IU football today, 4 o'clock kick against the Salukis over in Illinois. Again, what's a Saluki? I have no idea. But looking forward to a great tailgate, a great weekend. So I hope everyone out there listening does the same. Have a great weekend, everyone, a safe weekend. And I'll talk to you next Thursday night at 6 o'clock for a live edition of Your Money with David Hayes. Goodbye. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Guest opinions on this show do not necessarily represent those of the radio station, David Hayes, or CFCI. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC registered investment advisor, 674 South College Avenue.